So hello everybody, we have something to celebrate today because it's my very first episode in English language and I have my first guest in this podcast. And because here are coming two people together, I want to start with a quote from the great C.G. Jung. In German we say Carl Gustav Jung. And he said, "The meeting of two personalities is like the contact of two chemical substances. If there's any reaction, both are transformed." And I can't wait to introduce you to my guest today because the encounter I had with her was transformative for me in every way. Her name is Susan Schreiber-DeVilles and she is from the United States, close to Chicago, Illinois. And we will talk today about dreams. About if dreams have a deeper meaning for us. And if yes, how we can understand the message of our dreams. And even how we can use dreams to reduce our stress level. How amazing is that? And you can find out everything else about Susan and about today's topic in the podcast. So let us go on this journey together. So here we go.
No. Bullshit.
Spiritualität und das Leben auf den Punkt. Dein Podcast mit Marian Barno. So, lovely people, I'm here together today with Susan. And Susan is a woman that recalls her dreams very well since her early childhood. Later in life, she became a therapist and worked in the field of dream works, who helped her clients either uncover a problem or a potential. And she also ran educational seminars for universities and hospitals on the topic of how to help people on using their dreams. I personally met her first in 2018, and she was the host mom of my partner, Hannah. I was in a relationship at this time, and she did an exchange year abroad in the US several years before. And in 2018, we visited the United States together, and I had this great pleasure of meeting Susan at this time. And maybe you'll know this moment when you see a person for the first time and feel that there's a deeper connection. And yeah, like some waves that vibrate at the same frequency. And when I saw Susan for the first time, it was like 2 a.m. nighttime. We came with that rental car from the airport, arrived at her house that's 1 hour away from Chicago, a bit closer to the countryside, and she walked out of her house in her arms, her lovely dog Twinkie, and dressed in this dressing gown.
I was going to say the bathrobe.
Was it the bathrobe?
I don't know.
it was something between like a dressing gown and a bathrobe. And yeah, just welcoming us in such a warm and lovely way. And that was exactly the case where I felt like, yep, there is something. And so I look forward for an exciting conversation and I'm very happy to have you here today, Susan.
Well, I'm happy to be here. And it's a lovely introduction. And it was great to have you as a guest. And I felt much the same when I first met you. So here we are today again, and we've been talking for a couple of years since you were here 2 years ago, almost. No, a year and a half ago now, yeah.
Yes. Wow. Like, time flies also.
Yes.
And was it right when I said you are, like, good at recalling your dreams also since your early childhood?
Yes. I always, seems that I always recalled pretty easily. And there were times in my life when I recorded dreams. I had a dream journal and put the dreams down. I'm doing that again now. I am keeping a dream journal because I believe that at this crisis, unprecedented time in our globe, that the portals of our sensitivity are opening up.
Mm-hmm.
And that we are receiving information from ourselves and from each other and perhaps from the planet itself. And we are more open to that now because in times of crisis, we are just more sensitive.
In times of crisis, we are more sensitive.
I think so. In any crisis, we are very alert. It means survival to be very sensitive in times of crisis.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm keeping a dream journal again.
Wow.
And people do that.
And so you mean also a crisis on a personal level? And not like, for instance, now outside we have like this big crisis.
But talking about the big crisis, the global crisis.
Mm-hmm.
I am fortunate just to have the generalized crisis that all people are suffering, fear of the virus, fear of the economies crashing, fear of loved ones getting sick. I'm not suffering anything more personal than that right now. That is enough. But I think that the global crisis opens our portals to being more sensitive to the potential of learning something from this, to becoming more aware, and perhaps I like to think of becoming more connected. And dreams can do that. They can show us or show us a way to be more connected to ourselves and our loved ones.
Well, thank you, Susan. I also heard some days ago, somebody told me like Corona means you can relink it to the word crown, and I'm now diving a little bit deeper here because the crown which we have on our head is like the crown chakra, which is basically the connection to the higher force, which is the connection to God within the human body, and so I was thinking about maybe it's a great chance, a great opportunity to relink ourselves to that higher force, because when this crisis, and I think every crisis is also an opportunity to look more inward or to change perspectives.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes, I think so.
And I think this crisis currently has the huge potential to make big shift, because there are a lot of people, like the whole world is in that crisis right
now. That's right. We have the potential to recognize how we are all connected
yeah.
to each other and to the planet itself.
Yes.
And to we have the time. I don't know about you, but we are home quarantine. And so, you know, we have the time. For the first time, when you can ever recall, the whole planet has time to begin to question things and look inward and look outward to understand things in a different way.
Yeah.
But the dreams at night, they can come in interesting ways, because they're just as much a part of you as your daytime thinking, only they're not as defended, meaning we don't defend against some of the material that comes in. So,
So which meanings do have dreams in your life, like on a personal level?
Okay, well, all right, I have some things I've written down, but I might as well start with what comes first to my mind this past week. I believe in Jung's concept, Carl Jung, who was the colleague of Sigmund Freud. Carl Jung was a believer in the collective unconscious and in synchronicities. And this week I had two beautiful synchronicities that I love to share because they are healing synchronicities. They're ways of showing our connectedness. My former daughter-in-law, who was married to my son, has been divorced from my son, I guess, about 8 years now. I don't see her too often, but I always love her. And so I had a dream about that last week. And in the dream, I was saying to somebody, many people have turned her away, but I love her. So the next morning she called. And she said, what do you need? Can I go grocery shopping for you? And so she did.
Wow.
Okay, so that is one thing, what I would call a synchronicity. All right?
Yes.
And another one occurred with a very close friend of mine, whom I haven't all seen in 2 years. And she's my soulmate sister. We raised our children together in the same neighborhood, and I had a dream about her. So I called her the next day because I hadn't talked to her in 2 years. And she said, oh, I dreamed about you last night too. So I would call that another synchronicity, that we dreamed of each other on the same night, but we also had the time to talk and call each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so her dream about me was that I was in the hills of Palos, where we used to live together, running up hills where there was water coming down the hills in waterfalls, and that I was running up hills with great energy. So she said, this whole dream, which at my age, I don't run up hills with great energy anymore, but it could have been a metaphor. So I loved it. So let's say that those are things in my life where I reestablished connections with loved ones that I don't see much anymore, but they're always in my heart.
So they're always in your heart. And would you say there is a connection between what's in your heart and which touches you and can be shown up in dreams?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, the fact that each of these women has been special in my life, I dreamed about them in a loving way. And what happened is that one dreamed about me and the other called me.
Mm-hmm.
And Jung again, Carl Jung, the great Carl Jung, believed that people could do that. It's kind of like, I guess some people might call it telepathy, but that energy is passing from the loving kindness heart. Energy is passing from one to the other. Through many miles away, and receive it from each other. And I find that very spiritual when it happens, and I get very excited about it.
Wow.
Now, give me your question again.
For sure.
That was funny.
I have a lot of questions.
Yes, I bet. I don't know if I have any answers. I have experiences, okay?
And that's what... For me, it's interesting to share experiences and then just look what it brings for my life, that I can learn from your experiences, or we can learn from each other's experiences. And I was in my childhood, I also, when I had dreams about other people, I was like waking up and wondering, does this person know?
Oh.
If I dreamed of this person, or maybe this person was also dreaming of me. So I was wondering about this in childhood. Yes. And as you said, yeah, for sure, there is. What is for sure is that I am now connected to this person.
Yes, that's what's important. The dream is the vehicle. But so often it's beautiful to call somebody up and say, oh, I had this wonderful dream about you, you know. So, yeah.
What would you say, Susan? Where do dreams come from?
Okay. Well, they come from making connections in the brain. Now, some people debunk dreams. Even many very well-educated persons will say, well, they don't mean much at all. So I should state now, I don't come from any great knowledge in neural psychology. I come from the psychological perspective, and as an individual person who has experienced a lot of dreams and experienced a lot of the dreams of my own and of others. And I've studied how to interpret dreams in different ways. So they come from making connections in the brain, I think, that are freer than when we're awake. When we're awake, we're trying to make a connection. For example, an example would be, and this is a simple, not very spiritual example, this is a material mm-hmm. example, but it's useful. I lost my blouse. I had a little silky blouse that I went to work in, and I knew I was the only one that took my blouse off, but I could not find that blouse anywhere mm-hmm. because I came back late at night. I don't know what I did with it in a busy day where I put it, which maybe tells you something about my nighttime tired habits, but I couldn't find my blouse. So when I woke up, I thought, I'm trying to make connections. Where is that blouse? Where is it? Mm-hmm. I looked through my closet. I looked in the bathroom. I looked in my drawers. And I can't find it. So I asked myself, okay, you took it off yourself. You're the only one that knows where it is. So please send me a dream. Well, guess what? I dreamed about it. I dreamed it had slipped down, fallen down off my dresser behind the dresser. And there it was. So I dreamed of, I projected out a possibility of where it might be, you see. Mm-hmm. And in fact, that possibility turned out to be where it was. There you go.
Amazing.
So it was a looser connection. At night, I guess when I wasn't so angry at myself for losing it, the dream came up with a possibility. There are looser connections at night. In the daytime, we have tighter connections because we're in our conscious non-alpha state.
Yes.
Of thinking. And we are distracted. So anyway, mm-hmm. so they come from making connections mm-hmm. to try to often solve things. If it's to solve a problem or to build on a potential. For example, Elias Howe couldn't figure out how to finish the sewing machine needle. And in the daytime, he wasn't figuring it out at all. He just couldn't get the final step to the sewing machine needle. And so, perplexed as he was, he cooked up a dream. And the dream was, you probably read this in one of my papers, maybe. I don't know if this is in one of the papers. Did you read it?
I read one of them. I think it's called Dream More, Stress Less.
Okay. Well, I can't remember if this story is in it, but Elias Howe was trying to find the solution to the sewing machine needle, and consciously he couldn't make the connection of how mm-hmm. to do it. But in his dream state, in the alpha state, mm-hmm. Which incidentally is also the state of meditation. For sure. He dreamed he was in a forest in Africa, and there were many natives standing over him with spears up and down. The spears were going up and down, much like a sewing machine needle goes up and down. And in the tip of the spear was a hole. That was the sewing machine needle was born. So he was trying to solve a problem that was a potential for a great invention to come to birth. Okay? So similarly, we may have other problems we may be trying to solve in our dreams that might have to do with our health and welfare. I know you have read The Gym Dream in Dream More, Stress Less. The gym dream is about a man named Jim, who was a student in one of my college classes in behavioral sciences. And as a part of that class, for nurses, counselors, I requested that they remember a dream. So Jim said, I don't dream. And I said, yes, you do, or you would be hallucinating in 3 days. We need our dreams. So he said, well, I'll try, but I hope I won't flunk the class if I don't have a dream. And I assured him I wasn't going to flunk his paper or the class if he didn't remember a dream. But the following week, he came back with an incredible dream. You recall, you reread it, that he said, I had a dream. And he said, I woke up and it scared me. He said, I was driving down a superhighway and there was a lot of cars, too much traffic, a lot of chaos, a lot of honking, a lot of noise. I was driving about 100 miles an hour, too fast. And he said, my friend came up beside me, my old friend, John, came up beside me, pulled up on the right-hand side, looked over at me and shook his finger. No. And he said, I woke up. And so he says to me, what does it mean? And I said to him, I don't know, because I can't tell you what your dream means, but maybe I can help you tell yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So we did something called Gestalt. You know, the word in German, Gestalt, means the whole. And so Fritz Perls was the father of Gestalt therapy, and he believed that there are many parts to ourselves that make our whole self.
Mm-hmm.
So in Gestalt dream work, we take each part and take a look, since you created the dream, at the different parts. So I said, be John. Would you close your eyes for a minute and pretend you were John and speak as John? So he spoke as John after he relaxed a few seconds, and he said, oh, I'm telling my friend to slow down or he will die of a heart attack like I did. So with that, Jim opened his eyes and he said, oh my gosh, now I understand my dream.
Mm-hmm.
My friend John was trying to tell me I need to slow my life down. And in fact, Jim, who's given me permission to share this dream, said that in real life, he was going to school, managing 3 plants, was going through a divorce and couldn't sleep. And when he came back to class again, he said, I changed my life. I listened to Jeff.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I can really see this picture, like him driving on this highway and then his friend is doing this with his finger, like, yeah. No.
No.
Like the symbol of no. And this highway, which is like a fast.
Fast. Like
lane.
The Autobahn.
Yeah. The Autobahn. It is the Autobahn where we can drive with high speed.
Yep.
And yeah, when we are on high speed, we as faster as we go, it becomes more and more hard to look to the left and to the right.
That's right. We're, you know, there's an old Paul Simon song, slow down, you move too fast. Got to make the morning last. It's a great song from Simon and Garfunkel. Or I think Gandhi once said, there's more to life than just speeding it up.
For sure. For sure. I also bring up a German saying, and then I will translate it. But in German, it is we say, es kommt nicht darauf an, wie schnell... I think about that. Okay, I will cut it off. My brain is not able to receive the sentence now.
You'll probably dream about it tonight.
Yeah, maybe. But I also got inspired of the story about the alpha state, which you brought up, because it is really in meditation like that. We have those normally our wakeful consciousness is like in this beta state. And in meditation, we can come into this alpha state and also go deeper into the delta and theta states. And I have read in several books, or for instance, I have visited Salzburg, Salzburg is the city in Austria where Mozart lived. And I visited this museum and it was the house where he lived in. And there was one letter he has written. And he has written down, "It was not me who did this composition. I received it. And I needed like years to translate it, to decode it, and to be like artists, they use more those right brain hemisphere."
Yeah.
Like, this is my conclusion now. And when we are using more our right brain hemisphere, like the analytical mind, our left brain hemisphere slows down. And with that, we can also come more into this alpha state also while doing art. And I can really think that Mozart like used meditation, for instance, as a tool to receive like information and to make these compositions.
Or there's like, another thought that the music is the meditation. There are different ways of looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
That certainly, if you go into the meditation or the alpha state through meditation or the dream, you will get information. But similarly, you can turn it right around. On the other side of the coin, the music is the meditation, or the art, or the writing. Mm-hmm. I like to write. That's a hobby of mine. I write. Mm-hmm. And you're absolutely right. It came, and people have the sense that if they meditate first and get the sense of what they're going to create with music, it comes through them. It's as if, wait, I'm not the only creator of this. It's come through me, perhaps through something Jung called the collective unconscious. You've heard of that?
Yes, collective unconscious.
It's possible. You know, you're receiving information from other great composers, if you're Mozart or Beethoven, you know, great German composers.
Yeah. There are a lot. Like, I also visited the museum of Johann Sebastian Bach. When I listened to this music, I felt really like directly going into a meditation.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's why we have music for meditation. We have music designed just to help us, I think, the sound to bring us into alpha state. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And through that, we may get tremendous insights, tremendous visions or senses of what to create, which is very exciting to me. It said that, for example, the benzene ring was a dream. The concept that, you know, concept in chemistry, the benzene ring was a dream. Mm-hmm. I also read somewhere that the first open heart surgeon dreamed an open heart process. And get this, Mike Ditka of the Chicago Bears, the famous coach of the Chicago Bears, dreamed a touchdown pass for the 1985 Super Bowl win. Isn't that something? So they're dreaming of possibilities, of potentials.
Mm-hmm.
Solving things is beautiful. I like to think of dreams as creating just beautiful, beautiful possibilities. People will often ask me, but I have nightmares. They're terrible. How are they helping me? So I say that's because the nightmare is a picture of your fear, of your anger, or of your guilt. And you're just trying to find a solution to it. So somebody may say, well, I keep having it. So I would say, well, then you haven't found the solution. And I think we're seeking solutions in our waking time. And each day we live, we get new possibilities for solutions. And when we talk to a therapist or we talk to other people who are our therapists, if they're our friends, we get ideas for new solutions. And then we put them into our mind, and the dream may stop.
Mm-hmm.
The nightmare may stop.
Do you have like a story from working with people, working with clients, in the field of dream interpretation, where such a nightmare was, you came with the client to a solution.
I'll tell you one of a by the way, children are very suggestible. So when you tell them, you can get over this nightmare. You can do it. Here, this is kind of a complicated story, a little bit of a long story, but we'll go for it. I'll simplify it as much as possible. A child was referred to me with a recurring nightmare so bad that she couldn't go to sleep at night. She's given me permission to tell this story. This is like almost 40 years later since I first saw her. She was about 6 years old at the time. And so her nightmare was that a big, big bird, in fact, there was a big bird on a program in America called Sesame Street. Well, this big bird had a long, sharp, mean, razor-sharp beak. And this big bird would come into her bedroom in her dreams and stab her in the back. And then that big bird would stomp down the bedroom and stab her mother in the back. And it was just a bloody mess. So here every morning, this child was waking up to the fear that she was going to be stabbed in the back and blood was going to come and her mother was being stabbed in the back. And so she said, "What does it mean? I'm afraid to go to sleep at night." And I said what I usually say, "I don't know. Maybe I can help you find the meaning to your dream." So being that she's a child, one of the first things I asked her to do, I said, "Do you think, because I think you can do this, you can try, but if you can't, it's okay. But so you need to give permission. If you can't come up with something, it's okay. You're not a bad girl." But I said, "I think you could do this. Is dream up a solution in your dream so that the nightmare will stop? Some solution, something good in your dream. See if you can do it." So a couple of days later, she came back. I don't know if you read this in my paper or not, but she came back and she said, "I had a wonderful dream." And so you remember that the name of this mean big bird was, she named him. I asked her to name the characters. And remember, in Gestalt, we believe the characters are yourself, too, okay?
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow, so, that's interesting.
Yeah, wow, so this is a mean dream. So this big, nasty bird, she named him Poker. So I said, "Okay, tell me how you, what was good in your dream, that Poker came back, but why wasn't it a nightmare anymore?" And she said, "I dreamed up a friend for Poker. Poker needs a friend." And I said, "Okay, what was the friend's name?" She named the friend Pecker. So here we have Poker, and now Poker, who's stabbing everybody, now gets a friend named Pecker, who befriends Poker. And Poker's not angry anymore because he has a friend.
Wow.
So the nightmare went away. But what's very interesting is, you know, she solved it, but there was more. Because in speaking with people, it's really good to know, okay, what's going on in your waking life that you had this dream? So what was going on is there was a little girl in the neighborhood who was, this child's family was going through a very bitter divorce, so that mother and dad were separated. And the child was feeling lonely. Mother was angry. The child was angry. But there was a little girl in the neighborhood who was making fun. Stabbing her in the back is a metaphor in English for backstabbing, for saying bad things about people. This little girl was making fun of my little client because her family was going through a divorce. "Oh, what's the matter with your daddy and mommy? Oh, you know, how come your family isn't together?" And so she's making fun of my client, my little six-year-old client. You know, "Is it your fault? Did you do something bad to make them get divorced?" Backstabbing my client. And so you're getting the metaphor between Poker. Poker was stabbing this child in the back in the nightmare. But in real life, this other little neighbor girl was stabbing her in the back with words. Why is your family getting divorced? Did you do something wrong? So I said, okay, do you want to confront that little girl and tell her to stop it? Stop backstabbing you. Well, my little client was a pretty tough kid, so she did that. And so it turns out that the dream went away, and the little other little girl didn't stab my client in the back anymore.
Amazing.
More to the story, that little girl's family was going through a divorce a few months later. So guess what? She's acting out her own feelings of anger upon my client, if you're catching all the connections there. But my client was slept again. She didn't have her nightmare anymore.
Wow.
And she was told, you know, we helped her see she was not the cause of the parents' divorce at all. She was not the cause of that. So she didn't need to stab herself in the back anymore either. Because children will always wonder, did I cause my mommy and daddy to break up? Did I do something wrong? Okay. So she was stabbing herself in the back, as well as this other little girl was stabbing her in the back. It's a long story, but one of the more incredible experiences with a child, of sharing with the child, I think you can do this. And she did it, you know. So she made it a dream.
I think that needs a lot of, like, bravery.
Yeah.
I get from the story also that, like, to find a solution or to get, like, rid of these nightmares, to transform them,
yes,
it needs action in our wakeful state.
Yes, it's helpful. However, I believe there are some dreams that will incorporate coping mechanisms from the wakeful state into the dream state and resolve it that way. But the reason that people will come to see a therapist or talk to a good friend is that they can't do it in alone. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so important to, again, think of our dear friends as our therapists. Think of ourselves as our own therapist. When my client dreamed Pecker as a friend to Poker, she needed to befriend herself, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And stop thinking she had done something wrong to cause her parents' divorce. So sometimes, though, we may encounter some coping. Maybe Elias Howe was reading about Africans with spears that day, and he just incorporated that into his night dream and solved his problem of finishing off the sewing machine needle, okay? And so, you know, that could have been, he incorporated something like that.
Thank you so much for listening to this podcast so far. The second part of this episode about dreams with Susan Schreiber-DeVillis is already waiting for you. So, see you soon.